Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world that is constantly changing, it can seem harder and harder to keep up. Yet, we all know those people who, no matter what challenges or changes come their way, they somehow manage to thrive. They're contributing their very best, they are engaged in what matters most to them, and they are achieving the success that they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and what surprises show up. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be moving up within an organization, you might be an entrepreneur, a business owner, a salesperson, or self-employed. Or you may just be that person who feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when challenge or doubt show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. Welcome to a special episode of Unyielded. This is a rare two-part episode, as we covered so many valuable insights, tools, and hacks that we couldn't fit it all into just one episode. My guest today is a solution facilitator, and he is at his best when he is helping others solve complex problems that require new approaches and new ways of thinking. Those around him and closest to him tell him that his superpower is being intentional. And after talking with him, I completely agree. After a successful career with a heavy focus on sales effectiveness, he is currently on a sabbatical from full-time work, putting first things first, and will soon be gearing up to help launch and scale a technology startup. His name is Andy Williams, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Andy, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Looking forward to our discussion.
Yeah, me too. Especially, you know, since last time we talked, and then I was reflecting on the conversation. And I know that you had mentioned that people who know you really well, including, you know, teammates and former teammates, they tell you that your superpower is being intentional. And so I wanted to learn more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, being intentional, the genesis of that for me, and hopefully how it gets experienced by those around me, is just a desire to live life on purpose. You know, it all started with, you know, being 10 or 15 years ago and realizing that every one of us is being led by someone or something. Mm-hmm. And for me, I wanted to know who and what I was being led by. And it, from there, it has really become kind of a mantra for me internally. I don't use those words as much externally. So when people started saying them back to me, I was like, well, it's coming through apparently, because it's getting noticed. But yeah, it all started with a desire to, you know, to really live on purpose.
Yeah. I love that we're all being led by something or someone. What do you think led to that epiphany for you?
You know, for me, this was a bit of a kind of a life / career journey. I was, I had completed graduate school, and I was jumping into deciding kind of where the next phase of my life was. And I was getting a lot of advice, and none of the advice resonated with me.
Wow.
After a while, I started thinking, well, what is it about me that is leading to some really sound advice from really smart people that just didn't resonate with me? And I think I had to really kind of dig deep and go, okay, well, what's motivating that? Is it, because it can come from two very different places. One can be sort of internal pride, like I'm a unique character and therefore they don't really understand me, or it's that we really have different motivations and different assessments of what a life well lived might look like. So I think ultimately I landed that it was more of the second than the first. I'm not going to lie. There's certainly a little bit of that prideful, unique streak in me, but definitely landed on it being much more of the second.
Wow. That's really cool. And so you said that was like 10 to 15 years ago. What are some of the ways that it has kind of shown up for you?
Yeah. So, you know, where does being intentional come from kind of in a daily fashion? So I think I'll start with a very kind of simple and pithy example, and there's probably some much bigger ones we can get to, but you know, a lot of people talk about discipline, and you can look at somebody and say, oh, that person, they seem pretty disciplined. And we look at very external things like, oh, they look like they're still in shape, or they look like their career has, you know, a specific destination in mind. And, you know, there's good news for other people out there who don't find themselves to be very disciplined, because I'm not disciplined. It requires a good bit of effort for me to, you know, adhere to things. And I think, you know, for me, that being intentional is just sort of looking ahead and saying, okay, what would future Andy want current Andy to be doing? So if I want to be in shape 10 years from now, future Andy wants current Andy to make a few tough decisions right now. So it's kind of taken this, like I said, this future Andy point of view and saying, okay, well now, everything's got to be in sort of moderation, and everything's got to be with that future mindset in mind. So exercise is a really kind of obvious one, but you know, I've been a 5 day a week exercise person for close to a decade now. And that, wow, that just started with looking ahead 10 years and going, what does future Andy want to see have happen? And let's figure out how to get there. So that's a bit of a pithy kind of example that, you know, is very kind of accessible, but you know, that's just one of sort of wide ranging ways in which that's probably informed a lot of decisions I've made, I guess.
Yeah. You know, and Andy, it makes perfect sense too, you know? And I'm wondering, cause I'm thinking about our conversation and you had said, you know, like vision versus goals versus objectives, and then like the importance of habits. Is this kind of in that bucket?
Yeah, I would say so. And I'm a goal setting contrarian. There's a lot.
I want to know more about that.
There's a lot of great stuff out there about goal setting, and in my opinion, really well-meaning people doing a lot of good work. But everybody's heard, okay, well, you need to. So first of all, what have we heard? Goal setters achieve more. And we hear, well, you need to set SMART goals. And then I think it was smarter goals. And look, I love all of that, but all that is doing is set, for a lot of us, sets up this expectation that you have to have this massive sort of willpower and discipline to achieve big goals. And, you know, for me, I think much more sort of dynamically. I am much more of a win the day mentality. Rather than planting a flag 10 years out and saying that this is very precisely where I want to be 10 years from now, I point in a direction. And I'm okay if it's not completely perfectly defined. It's not, I want to have done this exact thing or have this super precise. It has to be clear enough that you know what direction you're headed in. And it has to be clear enough to know whether or not whatever behavior you're doing today is going to make that future more likely. So for me, it's, you know, how do I build daily habits that will increase the likelihood of that kind of picture that I have in my mind, which is different than a goal, right? That vision is, it's almost more like a portrait, except some of it isn't really filled in. I kind of have this metaphor where there's this painting that we're drawing, and some of it's done, some of it's not filled in at all, some of it's penciled in, and you know, for me and we, so my wife and I, for us, it's about, you know, continually clarifying what that picture needs to look like and then comparing where we are versus that, which is different than goal setting. I mean, the goal setting and that stuff is great, but for me, it just breaks down to two things. Is it clear enough? And is it motivating? And I get much more motivated by that picture than I get by, you know, a list that's like, you know, 12 of these by this date, you know, that kind of goal setting approach.
Yeah. And that is, there's so much of that out there. And again, you know, it works for a lot of people, but does it work for everybody?
And I think it's, you know, it's funny, I've been reflecting on this a little bit when, what's kind of the next frontier, maybe somewhat in the self-help world? And it's, I think there's one possibility that hopefully people can embrace, that there are lots of different paths. People talk about, well, there's lots of different paths you can take in your life, but there's also lots of different frameworks you can use to even assess your life or move your life forward. So hopefully, if nothing else, that people who don't find themselves to be natural goal setters and these sort of type A motivated to check things off the list people can realize that there are ways to be just as successful and make just as much progress using a different approach. It's almost like we have to help those people know that's who they are and then pair them up with a guide who is specifically paired up with them to help them on that journey, because your approach to that journey might look different than, you know, what you might read in The Economist or HBR.
Right. And so, Andy, with that in mind, is there a framework or something that you use when you are creating your vision or setting that intention?
This kind of leads a little bit into another kind of mindset thing that's kind of important to me, which is I tend to think about things in terms of increasing and decreasing probabilities or beliefs. So for me, instead of saying, am I going to cross this finish line? I like to think in terms of, will the things that I start doing increase the likelihood that I reach there? Because the world doesn't really work that way. We try to treat it mechanically, like it's almost like you push this button and this thing comes out on the other side, but life doesn't work that way. So first of all, it's for me, it's okay, what are the things that I can do? What do I know to be that I can do now and be intentional about doing? Because I have to be kind of purposeful. I can't just hope. This isn't about hoping that something comes out or saying things like, oh, I should do this. This is okay, what things this week can I do to move me closer to that? And move closer meaning increase the likelihood that future vision will become a reality. So, what are the key features of kind of living or approaching that way? So one of them is that thinking about it from what's more likely to be true or to help make something become true. And then it's almost like thinking like an agile project manager. It's like every 2 weeks, I look back at the last 2 weeks and I go, all right, am I happy with the direction? Am I happy with the progress? So instead of, did I cross this line? It's, am I headed in the right direction? And am I moving there fast enough? And that's really that's how we drive, right? You can think about it two ways. It's, have I gotten to my destination? But really what you're actually monitoring is, what direction am I going and how fast am I going? That's what you monitor.
Right. And I like the agile. My husband was certified in that for the project managing. But it's true. It's like that check-in to say, are we going in the right direction? And I think there's a lot to it. And I don't know, this really resonates for me, because for me, I'm more of the direction person. Like what's the picture kind of, in knowing that, you know what, some of the details are going to get filled in as I learn more, you know, because when I'm first getting started with something, it's like, I don't have all the details yet, but if I keep going in that direction, I'll learn more and that will allow me to fill in more details. I mean, if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. You know, that we talked about this in our last discussion. This is a big one. You know, my wife and I created, before we were engaged, this very broad and ill-defined, in a sense, definition of what our marriage should look like. But we knew how we wanted it to feel, and we knew what the fruits of that marriage should look like. Mm-hmm. But we'd never been married, and unfortunately, we didn't really have friends who had a marriage that looked like that either. So we couldn't fill in the details. It would have been comical to try to write out a bunch of goals or milestones. So instead, it was just committing to that direction. We're going to keep moving in that journey, and we're going to keep asking ourselves, are we moving in the right direction? And are we getting there as fast as we'd like to? And it's more work, but it's the right kind of work, because you're constantly having conversations about how are we doing. It's not because you're actually having two conversations. It's how are we doing and what are we measuring against, instead of just, you know, how are we doing? You've got to be constantly having both halves of the conversation.
Yeah. And it is intentional effort to have those conversations, you know. And when you say it's more work, why do you think it's more work?
I would say there's more time and effort put into it. And it's like staying carefully aligned. So you can, if you're not putting as much effort or attention into it, you're in a sense allowing yourself to waver further off the path. And then you're kind of hoping that you'll get snapped back in. But the further you wander off that path, the harder it gets to sort of snap back in.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't, you know, the snapback, you don't feel the work until it's almost like too late, right?
Yeah.
But staying on path on a day-to-day basis does require a little more intention, a little more intentionality, but it's well worth it. And anyone who's had one of those kind of life-altering moments that snaps you back and you realize, you know, people always say, oh, I wish I would have.
Yeah.
Right. If only, you know, the pastor at our church says there's nothing that breaks his heart more is to see somebody when they have something tragic happen in their lives. And then they kind of look to somebody within the church to help them. And you're kind of like, yeah, 2 years ago, we could have started helping you build relationships. We could have helped you be more intentional about building a network and having support and all those things. But right now, you're already in that moment, and there's not much you can do about it at this point because you hadn't built up that support system, that support network. So, yeah, in the moment, it will, yeah, feel like a little more work. I should be careful about the word work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, when you were talking there, I think the picture that came to mind, and maybe it's because you said the thing about driving earlier, it's kind of like the person who just sets the cruise control and, you know, kind of zones out. And then, like, oh, I ended up in a totally different state than what I was aiming for. But we didn't have to really pay attention because we were on cruise control, versus the person who's really, really taking the driving and piloting the car, you know, being aware of what's going on.
Yeah, there's a funny middle, right, to it, which is I'm certainly not advocating for constantly being in a state of response, like every single piece of stimulus coming in that might alter where you're going or how you're going. Is that, you know, from an actual brain science standpoint, that's cognitively taxing.
Yes.
Right.
It's exhausting.
We have to be kind of deliberate about which information is worth processing and which information is okay to set aside. And that's a whole nother area of intentionality, which is how you go about deciding what to analyze, deciding how to make your decisions and whether a decision needs to be made. So there's a bit of a funny middle in there that is kind of a happy medium.
Yeah. How do you keep yourself in that happy medium?
So I have the sort of benefit or potentially the heavy burden in a funny way. I actually studied decision analysis in college. So in decision analysis, it's the study of how either people do make decisions and all the mistakes they make and all the challenges fraught with quick decision making and your heuristics and your biases, and then how people should make their decisions. And the struggle with the how they should side, it's a kind of controversial, is it's hard to apply in day-to-day life. It gets used for things like oil and gas exploration, or, you know, should a pharmaceutical drug be moved from stage one to stage two studies, like really complex, expensive decisions where you have a lot of data that you can analyze. But for me, I learned how to leverage that same thinking without getting completely bogged down in analysis paralysis. And kind of for me personally, what that comes down to is being honest with myself about what my actual preferences are. Mm-hmm. So what do I prefer? And that's it's important because, again, who's leading you? If you're not careful, it's going to be money. It's going to be, you know, acquiring things. Because when we look around, that's what we see. That's what we see other people doing. It's the highly visible stuff. So instead, again, number one, be very kind of explicit about what your preferences are. And then two is being honest about your beliefs. And that's kind of back to this idea of, well, if I don't do anything, where am I going to end up? Well, if I change this, where do I think I'll end up? And sometimes you can gather good data on that. You know, what happened to other people? You know, what does the research say in some examples? But getting good at very quickly sort of, okay, what's the decision and what's my frame around the decision? What are my preferences? What do I believe? And then make a decision, you know, and to not try to be perfect.
It's, yeah.
You know, that for me, that, and that's a tough one because, you know, I come from a family of academics and I have an engineering degree. So a lot of me wants to have precise answers, and I've had to, you know, fight that. And that's been, you know, speaking of things to be intentional about, is practicing this not fast but not slow version of decision making. It requires practice, and you've got to realize that's important enough to practice and get good at it.
Mm. That leads me to think it's a skill.
I think it's learnable for sure. I would say it's, as I mentioned, it's a little controversial because there's a lot of, I guess, process orientation that came around it. And I think that the people who did really good work early on in this field probably lost their way a little bit because they were very strict and rigid on the, well, this is the right way to do it. This is the right process. And simultaneously, the other side of the field did a lot of great work on the psychology of decision making and how people actually did make their decisions, and sort of pass them by a little bit. And there's, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, you know, won an economics Nobel Prize basically for studying this. How do people actually make their decisions? And it's not light reading, but, you know, Thinking Fast and Slow, the book that Kahneman published, which was more accessible for the everyday person, probably more than his research papers, but does a really good job of showing their side of things. So I'm, you know, if I were giving someone a recommendation on how to get good at this and how to learn about it, the first step is to understand how we actually do make decisions. And then maybe in the future, kind of graduate to, okay, if I want to be better at making decisions, there are parts of his book that address that, like how to be a bit better at making decisions.
Yeah. A couple minutes ago, Andy, you said balancing it and kind of letting go of the need to make, I think you said, the perfect decision. And that can be hard because, like you say, you come from a family of, you know, academia, you're you know, engineer. How do you let go of that, that need or desire?
I'll tell you when I get there.
Please do.
So I'll go a different direction. So what's my hack? So I'm big on, okay, what habits or hacks can I develop that will short circuit this way of thinking? Always have three options. And I don't know that everyone will give this scenario, but when you're thinking about something and you compare to, you can get tricked into some really odd binary situations and you start thinking that these are the only two options out there. So one of the ways to be more disciplined about how you make your decisions is to kind of, the first step is know your frame. Like what is the decision I'm making and what is the context around it? And then the second one is, what are my alternatives? And if you get to only two alternatives right there, the rest of the process gets super predictable and it's not particularly thoughtful at that point. But if you can force yourself to create a third alternative, a third reasonable alternative, it does interesting things to how you look at the world, because it takes you out of that binary, you know, right, left, Democrat, Republican, right, wrong thinking, and forces you to have a little more nuance. Again, it will slow you down, but that's the point. It's to slow you down and have you be more intentional about that decision you're about to make.
Right. I love that, to have the three options. Okay. Anything else that goes into that hack, as you call it?
I think another one for me is to act the moment you decide. Mm. Or not analyze until you're ready to commit to act. Because otherwise you'll end up making the same decision multiple times. And that also does funny things to your brain. Like each time you reconsider the problem, what happens is you start holding your beliefs more strongly.
Oh, yeah.
Even though no new information has come in. So from a decision theorist standpoint, if no new information has come in, nothing should change about your beliefs. You should essentially be doing the same thing. But it's a funny thing that happens is our brains will actually strengthen our resolve in our belief for no good reason. So save yourself the time and energy and the mind trick you're about to play on yourself, and don't decide until you're ready to act.
Yeah. I love that though. If no new information has come in, kind of like, but we do that all the time. And I think that leads to like ruminating, and then, oh, you can just work yourself up with no new information coming in.
And for sure. And one of the worst things that comes out of that is the anxiety of I should have known. Mm-hmm. We feel like the longer we analyze a problem, somehow that is supposed to get us closer to certainty, but it's not. If no new information comes in, you can't hold yourself to that expectation. And that's another important part of this, kind of that binary thinking. If you relieve yourself of the binary thinking and you embrace that more of a the world is uncertain mindset, then your decision and the outcome are separated in space by a little bit. They're separated by that uncertainty. And that means that you can make a good decision and something bad may happen. And you can make a bad decision and it may still work out. And that's just the funny reality of having free will and living in a world where everyone else has free will and we're all independent actors. But that's an important piece of that same thinking. And I think, you know, how do we maintain peace in our life? And I haven't had that difficult of a life, but we've had our challenges. But yeah, separating the decisions we make and the actions we take from the outcomes, not divorcing them completely, you know, we are still accountable for them, but just that little bit of space and separation between them can save you a lot of that anxiety.
I hope that you have enjoyed the first part of our conversation. Here are just some of my key takeaways from this portion. Number one, We are always being led by something or someone. So be intentional about leading yourself and your own life. This reminds me of something that I heard years ago, and it's always stuck with me. And it's this: be the author of your own life. Because if you don't, someone else will. Number two, I love how he uses the framing of, what would future Andy want current Andy to do right now to guide his decisions? Number three, I completely agree with him when he says that goals are not the only way to be successful. Sometimes what's more valuable is to set a direction that we believe in that is clear enough so that we can take action. To be highly effective, this direction should have two components. One, is it clear enough? And two, is it motivating? Number four, once you have your direction, establish daily habits that will lead you in that direction. I think that this is a super important step, and I use it myself. Once we have the daily habits in place, we actually need less discipline to do those things. Number five, I thought it was really powerful when he talked about how he and his wife, Suzanne, worked to stay carefully aligned by checking in and saying, how are we doing? And what do you think of the direction now? Like he said, it takes a little bit more work, but it's part of being intentional. Number six, a few things stood out to me when he was talking about his framework and hacks for making decisions. One, be honest about your beliefs and preferences. Sometimes I think that this can be really hard for us to do, but it's important if we're going to make a good decision and one that we can live with and be happy with. Two, don't try to be perfect with our decisions. In coaching, I see this all the time where people agonize and they try to get the decision just right as though there's only one perfect decision. We can spend so much time and so much energy trying to get something perfect that we can never get to acting. And besides that, I think perfect is a really elusive goal. Three, and I love this one, always have more than just two options or two alternatives. Four, act the moment that you decide, or don't decide until you're ready to act. Otherwise, you just end up making the same decisions multiple times, and this makes you become even more attached to your decision. If there's no new information, then there's no reason to keep considering it. And number five, when making decisions, save yourself the anxiety that is sometimes attached to it by recognizing that sometimes you can make the very best decision and still get the wrong outcome. I hope that you are enjoying this episode. In the second part, we cover things like how sometimes a master plan can actually obscure better opportunities for us. We'll also talk about how he and Suzanne have built their marriage very intentionally. We'll talk about the value of pushing a comfort zone, right up to what he calls the delusional zone. We'll also talk about how he views failure, and finally, his thoughts on leadership. I hope that you'll tune in and enjoy it. Speaking of leadership, I'm often asked for my favorite leadership book, so I've put together what I call my eclectic but essential leadership list. You can check it out by going to unyielded.net/leadership book list. If you're finding this podcast and this episode helpful, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple. It's the very best way to help us to spread this message of hope that we can all thrive by living truly fulfilled and authentic lives.